Welcome back to Sports Intoxication.
We got a home run now.
Oh no.
That's a perfect intro.
Yeah. Good timing. I was getting ready to fire, and then Matt started yelling at the Reds, which was perfect. Gave me a good chuckle. You know how we do. We record for 6 straight weeks, and then we don't record for another 6 or 7 weeks.
Life so, happens.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to be back. It's good to be back in your ear. Life has happened. We've got new kids. We've got new houses. There's just absolute mayhem, but we've settled it down, and we're all here.
We've survived, and here we go. We're revitalizing the podcast again.
This would be life number, 11 for this podcast. But Sox here with you tonight. Matt with the fist pump.
Reds win, baby. Reds win.
That means something's good is happening. I'm about 20 seconds behind. Can't wait to see it.
Breaking news. And you heard Brian Chase chime in there. My phone says middle of the ninth, but they're not going to need to go to the bottom of the ninth by my math.
Ball game.
The Reds are back over 500. And that leads us to our first topic. We haven't talked since, the Bengals draft. Late April. So, since then, in a nutshell, the Reds have been up and down. Up and down, up and down. Most recently, down, although they're on a 2-game win streak currently. And they lead the National League Central in runs scored.
Aren't they second in the NL in runs scored?
Yes, and they have a decent starting staff ERA, especially if you – remove Luis Castillo, which I know you can't do that, but Castillo has turned it on of late. But the bullpen has just been a complete disaster.
I don't know if it's been historically bad, but it feels like historically bad.
It feels that way. I totally agree.
We were talking about this on our group text. I mean, they blew 2 games in San Diego. They blew the first game in Minnesota, that's 3 games. They blew – I know they've blown other games, but the ones that just stick out like a sore thumb to me are the 3-game homestand in April against the Diamondbacks, who have since gone 3-50. And if
just think about it. I think it's 3-40, Brian. Let's give them
some credit. Sorry. And it's not like these were one-run leads. They were multi-run leads that were blown by the bullpen repeatedly. And if you take those 6 games, they're now 37-36. You take those 6 games, they're 43-30. Think about that. I mean, that's a team that is at the top of the National League or near the top of the National League. This team is a good bullpen away from being a contender in the National League. And the most disappointing thing about it is ownership clearly just doesn't give a rat's ass.
This would have been a fantastic time, well, really any time this year, depending on what the Reds do going forward, to have, I'm going to say friend of the podcast. He's not a friend of the podcast. He's never been on the podcast. But Mo Egger is a friend of a friend of the podcast. And he has been railing on ownership for weeks, and I love it. And I hate to turn on the radio and just hear straight negativity, but I do like to turn on the radio and hear objective criticism. You it's unbelievable what they did to this team. And these guys, Castellanos, Winker,
right? Miley. That's the thing. I feel so bad for the position players because they're out there busting their ass, having a great year, and the bullpen blows multiple games a week.
Absolutely. It's a travesty. And in this up and down that we've experienced, TJ Antone was down for a week, and out of the gate, the bullpen stepped up. And then in San Diego, they completely stepped down. Now, Lucas Sims is on the DL, and it's going to be at least a month, it sounds like. Lucas Sims Matt, I'll get to you in a second. You haven't really said much yet, but Lucas Sims might be a candidate for Trevor Bauer. Maybe Lucas Sims was using sticky stuff. Maybe he tried to go straight this year. I mean, he just hasn't been as good this year. I mean, he was dominant last year. He was so good last year. And I know that happens. It's happened to Amir Garrett too. But I think this whole thing that's happening with Major League Baseball right now is fascinating. And also completely asinine that they do it in the middle of the season. I mean, Major League Baseball, like, take a bow. You've found yet another way to completely make yourself look like an asshole. Like, good job. Matt. Yeah.
Rob? No, I mean, you can't. I mean, the Major League Baseball piece, it's just hilarious what's going on from that standpoint. But back to the Reds. They're what, 37 and 36? 36 and 35 now? 37 and 36.
So,
you know, it's kind of the same season that they had last year in terms of record, only just kind of a different way to get there, right? I think the offense has proven to be very good.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Say it.
Wait, no.
BBC.
No. I mean, I think if you go back and listen to a podcast that we did in April or March, I said the offense wasn't going to be the problem. I was concerned about the pitching. I know if you go back and listen to it, you would hear that.
August of 2020, like, September of 2020, October.
And I'm not the only one. Like, I'm not tooting my own horn here by any means. Everyone was concerned about it. But at the same time, like, this is where they're at, and they have a team that I think the offense has proven to be very good. I mean, it's I don't want to say dominant because it's not based on their record, but it's an offense that keeps them in every game that they play for the most part, other than the one-offs where you just run into a hot pitcher. And you know, the bullpen thing, I mean, quite honestly, it sucks. I mean, like Brian said, they should have 6-7 more wins. But, you know, they don't. And now is month, I think, is going to be very interesting. You know, I'm not really one to look back on things and see – kind of what they could have done differently. It's like, all right, what do you do to make this team a contender or make this team better? And I'll go back to my point when we were talking about adding a shortstop 3 months ago. I still don't think this team is World Series contending team with a good bullpen. I don't. I think the Dodgers are better. I think the Padres, you know, it's baseball, so who knows what happens. But, like, the next month is going to be very interesting to me to see kind of where things shake out, because you have last offseason where the ownership just decided, hey, fuck all you guys. We're dumping payroll, and we're just going to go with the guys that we have and see what happens. And to be quite honest, I think, side tangent to what I was going to say, is I think David Bell's done a really good job based on what he's had available. Sure. To have this team over 500 at this point in the year with the bullpen performance, I think is pretty solid, to be perfectly honest. But the next month is going to be really interesting to see kind of where they go. I mean, you have probably, 30 games? Not 30 with the All-Star break. What, 25 games before the All-Star break or before the trade deadline. So, yeah. Four games out
probably,
now.
Probably 30.
Is it 30? Yeah, that's true. That's true. So you're 30 games, you know, based on their track record right now, if you're 15 and or if you're 13 and 13 3 days before the trade deadline, you know, in the next 26 games, where do they go? I'm just really curious to see how they progress this season, right? Because the offseason's done. Last offseason, you can't do anything about it. But what do they decide to do with where they are now? And at four games out in a division that's very winnable, I don't think – I mean, the Reds probably have the best offense in the division. They'd be winning the division if they had better pitching. But – I'm just really curious as to see how these next 30 days play out, because there's an opportunity to make some progress on your team, but will they do it is the most interesting thing to me. And, you know,
I'd be shocked if they do.
Well, I mean, I think
they're buyers at the deadline.
I think I'd be shocked if they don't, though, to be honest with you. Even if they're like six games, because at some point you're running into, and Bob Castellini has said he's always wanted to bring a winner here. At some point you have to prove it, and they didn't do it last year, and they didn't do it in the offseason. But even if you're four games out in a month, I think you have to make a run for it, because the guys on this team are not – or nobody is, obviously. But the guys on this team are not getting any younger, and you have a chance to make a run. I still don't think they're a World Series team. I don't think they're – I think they might be able to win a first-round series, maybe. But –
here's why I don't think they're going to do anything at the deadline, is because if you look at their injured list right now, management's going to say, well, we've been holding it together with the guys that we've got. There's nobody that we can trade for that is going to improve us beyond the guys that we have coming back off the disabled list in the second half, thinking Sonny Gray has pitched, what, like five or six games. You've got Michael Lorenzen coming back. Arguably, you should have Lucas Sims coming back. You have Hoffman, or what's the Hoffman, the starting pitcher that you can put in the bullpen. Yeah. So I just I wish that I had more confidence, but this is the textbook Bengals playbook offseason the last couple of years of Marvin. We had too many injuries. We believe in our guys that are coming back. We're not going to be able to trade or sign guys that are better than that, so we're going to roll with what we have, and then inevitably it's not going to work out, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I just think they're in a position now where, you know, Votto's what, got 3 years left at this point?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing that makes this whole bullpen fiasco and what they did with Archer and
Iglesias.
Yeah. What is his name? Bradley?
Archie Bradley.
Is that, yeah, if you look at their roster, yeah, Votto, how many more good years does Votto have? And then you've got Suarez is basically in the prime of his career, even though he's not playing like it. Castellanos is in the prime of his career. Winker is arguably at the beginning of the prime of his career. And Castellanos has the option to opt out after this season. So, like, you got to be looking at this as a, this is my year. And instead of doing that and throwing down an extra $20 million in payroll to try to shore up the bullpen, they're cutting costs. And I understand you want to make a profit, but, like, think about this city is such a fair weather city. When the Reds or the Bengals are good, people go nuts. So if you have a good team this time of year, instead of putting 20,000 people in the seats, you're going to be putting 30,000 plus in the seats every night. We know that. We've seen that happen. when they go through good stretches. And if you have 10,000 extra tickets every night for 40 games at an average of $25 a pop, I mean, that covers your 10 or 15 million extra in bullpen arms right there. Like, it's just, you can't sit here and tell me with a straight face that you're all about winning and then have the actions that you had this offseason.
I totally agree with you. A couple things that I'll say. One, and this is not in defense of ownership, but they didn't know when they made those moves that they were going to be able to have full capacity at any point based on what was happening when they made those moves. But that being said, you're absolutely right about Castellanos. As far as Votto goes, how many years of – Votto's not having – I mean, like, yeah, he's got 13 RBIs in his last 13 games. He came off the disabled list a little hot. He's got some power now, but he's not Joey Votto anymore. He's not.
I threw out his name based on his last 2 weeks. More
sure.
And he can get hot. Or sixth or seventh hitter in your lineup.
And he should be. A good absolutely. The flip side of that coin too, though, is yes, Jesse Winker. Jonathan's here for a long time.
Stevenson.
Tyler Stevenson's here for a long time. And I, more and more, I'd like to see him starting. And if sometimes that comes at the expense of Joey Votto, it is what it is. Suarez right now, like, I just don't even know what to do or say. There's nothing to do or say. It is what it is.
He's gotten better, though, the last couple weeks. It seems like he's somewhat turning it on.
His average has climbed up from 120 to 160, maybe 170.
By now, better.
It's better. You're right. but there are pieces. But Castellanos is the biggest piece, and that they got to figure that out. To your point, Chase, I totally agree with you. They're not going to do anything as far as adding a piece or two to the bullpen, and it's the exact reasons and names that you said, but I'll raise you a couple more names, potentially Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo. And well, maybe not Nick Lodolo. He's still in Double A, but Tony Santion could maybe go to the bullpen. When Sonny comes back, it just, here's what I need to see from management, David Bell, Nick Kroll, whatever. I need to see the best guys up here. Like, regardless of, they need to be able to get people out. So if Tony Santion is able to get guys out at the major leagues like he did tonight, let him do it out of the bullpen. And, well, you might need a sixth or a seventh starter at some point. I don't care. Then it can be right. Hunter Green, or it can be Nick Lodolo, or it can be one of the guys that's throwing at AAA right now. I don't care about that right now. They need to get guys out in the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, and they need that can come at the expense of the sixth or seventh or eighth best starter in the organization. And yes, Jeff Hoffman should absolutely go to the bullpen, and if he can't get it done in the bullpen, then adios. Right. Like has happened with Jose De Leon. I'm sure we'll see him again at some point. But it just, they've got to figure out something with the arms that they have, because we've seen, and that's what's frustrating from a fan standpoint, is we've seen some guys come up from AAA that are starting that are getting people out. So how nice would it have been to have Vladimir Gutierrez pitching out of the bullpen earlier this year?
Right. Well, and I think the other thing that's just really aggravating and frustrating is, let's say that these guys that they have do get it together, but they miss the playoffs by 3 games. Well, how many games have they blown in the first 3 months of the season? Mm-hmm. Because management, was just making a mess of this bullpen at the beginning of the year. And, yeah, you can say, well, we didn't have Michael Lorenzen and we had some other injuries. Everybody has injuries. You set it up so that the bullpen was so, threadbare that if you had anything go wrong, you were potentially in a world of hurt. And we've seen that.
Yep. Think about the – well, no, you don't want to think about. But just for 20 seconds, think about the depth that this bullpen could have if you had Archie Bradley and Raisel Iglesias pitching in front of TJ Antone. And yes, Sims and Garrett have been disappointing, but maybe they aren't disappointing because they're not feeling the pressure of the roles that they're in. And I mean, there's names that you wouldn't have ever even heard of because they wouldn't be here, because there'd be better guys. And you can give me Archie Bradley's stats in Philly this year. They're not that great, but they're better than the Reds bullpen collectively as a whole. And the ability to use TJ Antone when you have those other two guys as your fire putter outer guy or as your fifth starter. So Jeff Hoffman never, I mean, like there's, it's possibility after possibility. It's frustrating.
It just goes back to the fact that the sports teams in this city have just awful ownership groups. I don't know how you can put it any other way. I mean, if the teams in the city had ownership groups that had any clue what they were doing and had any interest in consistently putting a winner on the field, then we wouldn't be in a situation where we've gone 30 years without either of them advancing in the playoffs. It's that simple.
Well, I agree. And to your point about who's coming back and what's coming back, Sonny Gray could be back in the rotation next week. And knock on wood, fingers crossed, whatever you want to do. Let's say he comes out and pitches like Sonny Gray. Well, Luis Castillo is pitching like Luis Castillo was supposed to pitch for his last four or five outings, I think. And Tyler Miley's pitching incredibly well. Wade Miley's pitching incredibly well.
Yeah.
And Vladimir Gutierrez has been a revelation for now, and the league will make adjustments and he'll make it. But like you could have something that was similar to last year where you had a rotation that could go up against anybody in the playoffs. Now, last year they couldn't score a run in the playoffs and cost them a 1-0 game in extra innings. But take that hate out on the Braves right now. Sweep the series or take three or four, and just keep it going. Also of note, the Reds have a tough stretch. These next couple of weeks aren't terrible. July is going to be a difficult month, the beginning of August. But if you haven't noticed, the Reds haven't played the Pirates in a while. And I think they play them six times in September or mid-August to late September.
And I think they close with them in October.
Marlins six times in September. So the schedule could set up well.
And they have the Tigers three times in September.
Yep.
Yeah, they've got 9 games against the Pirates from September 14th through October 3rd.
That's amazing.
But then they also play
setting up for a lot of disappointment.
The Cardinals versus the Dodgers, versus the Nationals, at the White Sox. So yeah, they've got some tough sprinkled in there. But yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing that's just aggravating about this team is similar to last year when they couldn't consistently beat the Pirates. It's like, how do you go 1-5 against the Diamondbacks?
Yeah. They were playing well. And that's, sorry, age-old baseball adage. It's not who you play, it's when you play them.
It's just frustrating.
The Diamondbacks were playing pretty decent ball at that point. Maybe it's because they were playing the Reds. Slash the Reds bullpen. I mean, at very least, this is going to shape up to be, as Matt mentioned, very adeptly, because Matt is our baseball guy on this podcast. When we talk about baseball, we look at the back of Matt's baseball card, because it shows is back of the baseball card guy.
Yeah. He obviously has a huge baseball card collection in his basement.
Yeah, there's a box over here somewhere that has all the baseball cards in it.
But this next month is going to be incredibly exciting. Or, I mean, if you want to get frustrated, if you want to get pissed off, if you want to be elated.
Or we'll be very excited about Joe Burrow and training camp.
Exactly. And oftentimes, as Reds fans, we say, get me to July, end of July, so that we can be excited for the Bengals.
And then with the Bengals, we say, get me to the beginning of November so I can be excited about Xavier.
Exactly. So they all just got to do their jobs. But keep an eye on the Reds next month, because I think if they can stay afloat, we like we talked about, the end of the schedule has some winnable games. And it could be interesting. But I would not, as Chase said, I would not cross your – or I would not hold out hope that they're going to take a big swing. And that's the other thing about that is everyone's looking for bullpen help. So who – you can't give up any big pieces.
Yeah.
Although they didn't give up shit last year to get Archie Bradley. So if you're going to give up stuff like that, then go get it. That takes us to the Bengals. Last time we talked, we were on the eve of draft night, and I think that Brian Chase correctly picked that the Bengals were going to draft Cam Sample, but he incorrectly picked that the Bengals were going to trade back in the first round and take Penei Sewell, so he didn't get the most obvious pick of
Chase. But I think the way that my draft worked out is I traded back twice and I got Penei Sewell.
You did. You went back to 13.
Yeah, you but then picks. In my other one I did, where I didn't do any trades, I did take Jamar Chase. But that wasn't my official Sports Intox draft, I guess.
And I don't have my draft in front of me. I wrote down yours and Matt's, and I didn't write down mine. Matt and I both drafted Chase, though. So really, as far as I know, we all got one right, which is not bad for the NFL draft, you know. Matt and I got the easy one.
Yeah.
But one is one. So we don't need to talk about or recap the NFL draft, but we can talk about the optimism surrounding the Bengals after a very positive OTA, and it went so well that, and the Bengals are so good that Zach Taylor gave them a couple days off because they're good. They're ready for the Super Bowl. I don't know what number Super Bowl this is, 50 something.
Hey, let's just get more than 4 wins this year. Then we can talk.
Well, there's 17 games. So there's another opportunity on the schedule for another win. But the big talk of OTAs was, basically a healthy Joe Burrow. He's at 85%, I think I heard him say. And also he's displaying a little more zip on the ball, added some arm strength, either through mechanics or lifting. I don't know how you add arm strength. Probably a combination of mechanics and I don't know. I should probably we should get a quarterback guru on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Do we have any connections to quarterback gurus? Jordan Palmer.
There you go.
We'll have to reach out to him on the Twitter. We're a month away, as Chase said, from training camp, and we'll probably see Joe Burrow take 0 preseason steps. Maybe he'll take a series or two in game 3 or game 2.
So are they having a full preseason with the 17 games? Because wasn't that one of the things they were talking about, getting rid of preseason to add the extra game?
3 preseason games.
Got it.
So I don't know if game 2 now becomes like game 3 used to be.
Yeah, how does that anybody know what the dress rehearsal is?
It's got to be game 2. Can't be game 3.
Okay.
It's going to be Bengals Colts somewhere.
Fact. There's not really a ton to talk about with the Bengals as far as news. I mean, they played in shorts. Although, something that we should talk about is the potential in the next 2 weeks, maybe, to I'll reach out, see if we can get Paul Daner Jr. and Jay Morrison on, because it's their downtime, it's their slow time.
Yeah.
So maybe we can get them on to have some drinks and talk to us about, you know, Paul's relationship with Marvin Lewis and all that fun stuff, and Zach Taylor.
So did we ever get to the bottom of the Marvin Lewis Frisch's fiasco? What's
no, but Arizona State, Marvin Lewis is apparently up to his new ways of cheating at Arizona State.
Yeah.
I don't think he was ever a big cheater here with the Bengals.
If he was, you sure wouldn't hope so.
Exactly.
Although, actually, I say he wasn't very good at it, although look at his record with the Bengals compared to the guys before and after him. So maybe he actually was very good at it.
That's true. It's very true. Xavier added a new transfer since we talked, Jerome Hunter from IU. A wing out of Columbus. He was hurt a couple years in at IU. They're going to have 25 scholarship players next year. It's going to be like the Reds, like a 25-man roster.
They're slowly turning into a college football team with a number of scholarships.
I did, and you guys are going to be very disappointed in me. And I'm disappointed in me now, too, because I've had a couple drinks. Speaking of which, what's everybody drinking?
I was drinking
Elijah Craig straight rye.
Attaboy. Love that stuff.
I was drinking some Jefferson's, and now I have just switched to a Bud Light before my midnight and 3 a.m. wake-up calls.
So, as you can, you may have deduced, Chase is not the one that moved.
Yeah.
But
next podcast, I'll be the one that moved and has.
Yes. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get one in before then. But would you say 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Two weeks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got to talk to Paul like yesterday. Although it is kind of a tradition to have big guests on without you here and then talk shit about your takes.
If Paul's going to be here, I'll be on. Maybe we'll just be sitting right here.
He'll take that call from the hospital room if you have to.
After what happened with Broering, it'll never happen again.
Sir, we're walking into the OR. Yeah. You got to get off your phone.
I feel like we skipped over the Bengals a little too quickly, though.
Okay, hold on. One more nugget. Congrats and huge shout out to definite friend of the podcast, our guy, Rick Broering. He's taking no more visits. He is hashtag committed.
Congrats, engaged Rick.
To be married.
Yeah. Congrats.
And you got to think that we are all going to be invited to that wedding. So that'll be fun.
Don't see how he won't.
Can't wait for the invites to come.
No, we'll get after him.
Yeah. For sure.
I think we skipped over the Bengals a little too quickly. Since we haven't talked on the draft, and we've only been talking for a little bit tonight. I gotta say, and this is, I know how this is going to come across, giving my reputation on here as being a Bengals homer a little bit.
Now, hold on. Before you make this take, can we just refresh everyone's memory how many games you predicted the Bengals were going to win last year?
I picked them to win 10 last year.
Okay. All right.
And I think they would have won 8 with Joe Burrow healthy. So
keep that in mind as Matt makes his next comment.
Well, if Joe Burrow was healthy, they would have won 8. So
I love that. We're getting closer to Bengals season because there's already some contentiousness in the podcast. There's a little bit of.
All I was going to say is I don't know how you couldn't be excited for what the Bengals have done this offseason in free agency and in the draft to make their roster better, to make their product better. You know, I'm not going to say that they're going to win the division by any means, but I think they're going to be a much more competitive team based on what they've done. And I just think we need to talk about it a little bit in that, you know, they've done a lot to make their team better in positions that were not necessarily great prior. Now, granted, there's still going to be weaknesses, and you're still relying on some pieces that aren't necessarily proven. But at some point, there's just not anything that you can do about it. You've already made the draft pick, or you've already signed the player, whatever. So, I did. You know, I'm very excited about this season, assuming you have a healthy Joe Burrow, that they can win, I think, 8, 9, 10 games is a reasonable expectation for where they should be, especially with a 17-game season. That, you know, not necessarily a playoff team, but if you get the 8, 9 wins, I think that's showing some progress, and that's showing, most importantly, that Zach Taylor kind of knows what he's doing, which I still think he does know what he's doing, but he just hasn't had the pieces. So
I completely agree with your assessment of the offseason in terms of players and how the draft went. I think you got to feel decent about the pieces they have coming in as far as talent to compete. I think the biggest question still is, does the coaching staff have any clue what they're doing? And that's not just Zach Taylor. That is our buddy Lou Anarumo and everybody on the defensive side too.
Yeah.
Because I think you can have all the talent in the world, and talent can cover a lot of mistakes, but if your coaches have no clue how to coach them up, it's probably not going to matter that much in the NFL.
That's true.
I think what that said, basically, is hashtag fan engagement, hashtag trenches, hashtag depth, hashtag Ring of Honor, hashtag Zach Taylor, hashtag offensive weapons.
Yeah, I mean, I just really think it's more of, like, you look at this team from an, and this is all based on the assumption that Joe Burrow is going to be healthy.
Sure.
Right? And that's the biggest question mark for the next 3 months is he going to be – or 2 months. Is he going to be healthy come September, whatever that is, 13th or whenever their first game is? And if he is, that offense should not be able to be stopped based on the weapons that they have. Like, they shouldn't be able to be stopped. If he's healthy and if he is confident and comfortable in the pocket, there's no reason that Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, is
Drew Sample.
The touchdown maker, Drew Sample. CJ Uzama, if he's back, he'll be back healthy.
Yeah,
he's been proven to be a relatively good tight end. Mixon, like, that offense should not be able to be stopped. So then it comes down to, what do you have on the defensive side of the ball? And I think they made good moves last year. Unfortunately, they got hurt by injuries. So where, you know, it's just going to be how that plays out. But
from an offensive side of things,
they shouldn't be stopped.
And what they did last year in free agency is going to really pay off a bunch more this year with what they did in free agency, because DJ Reader played 4 or 5 games. Trey Wayne's played 0 games. And then they added Chidobe Awuzie, Mike Hilton. Yep. They added these defensive line draft picks. They went heavy there. 4 picks on the defensive line, 3 defensive ends, 1 defensive tackle. And then
Hendrickson
and the Trey Hendrickson signing, and they've added three offensive linemen in the draft. Two offensive linemen in the draft and Riley Reiff. One of those offensive linemen they added in the draft, they're expecting to start being Jackson Carman, local product out of Fairfield High School. And start on the interior. In theory, to your point, Matt, the offensive line with Riley Reiff and Jonah Williams is the outside's pretty good. The inside's what they got to figure out. So some combination of Xavier Suafila, Quentin Spain, Jackson Carman, and no one wants to hear this name, Michael Jordan.
Well, and they also got to figure out the center position because Hopkins is coming off a torn ACL, and then you got Billy Price, who's spent 4 years of mediocrity with the Bengals.
Billy Price is a fine backup center. He's not – I honestly have faith that Billy Price will do a fine job for 3 or 4 games until Trey's back. Now, I agree with you. We got to hope that Trey comes back good and ready to go. But I think that Billy Price is a – I think Billy Price is probably a starter in the NFL. I think, once again, the Bengals – he was drafted by the Bengals in the first round. He was handed the starting job. He wasn't ready. He got hurt. They moved him to guard. That didn't work. They moved him back to center. They moved him back to guard. Like, his tenure with the Bengals, and I'm not saying that I'm not saying it was a good draft pick. It was a terrible draft pick. I'm saying that he has had an up and down tenure with the Bengals as far as being a guard, a center, and being hurt. And I thought he did a serviceable job after Trey went out last year. And I also know that he was a big fan of, and a big fan of his was new offensive line coach / old offensive line coach, Frank Pollock.
Right.
So that's another area where there could be improvement.
Go Canadians.
NHL win.
Did they do it?
Yeah.
I'm a little behind here because I just saw the shot by Las Vegas that got stopped.
Oh, the goal's coming. I got to find the NBA game.
It's on ESPN.
Paul George just banked in a half-court shot to end the third quarter.
Wow, that happened so fast. I couldn't even, like, I didn't even see the pass before the goal.
So, we talked about the Bengals. We talked about the Reds. We talked a little bit about Xavier. Oh, I was going to tell you why you're going to be disappointed in me. Yesterday, I went to FedEx, Kinko's, and I recognized the figure there, and I didn't approach him to ask him A, to be on the podcast, or B, what's the latest happenings with the men's basketball team 100 at Xavier University. That figure was Mario Mercurio.
Oh, come on.
I know.
Is it team 100 this year, or is it team 101? I think last year was team 100.
See, that's why I didn't approach him, because I wasn't sure about 101 or 100.
I think last year was team 100.
I think it was too, except for now they're saying, I feel like I've seen team 100 on stuff this year. I don't know.
Well, last year was COVID year, so it didn't count. So,
sure.
But, forgot about but, that. If you're listening, Mario, reach out. Let's have you on.
It is amazing what these NHL players can do with a hockey puck.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We've reached the hockey point of our podcast. you know, that, what's that show? PTI. They do like 30 good seconds or something. Do one of you guys have 30 good seconds on hockey?
No.
Okay. The Dan Patrick Show used to do 5 good seconds on soccer. Do one of you guys have 5 good seconds on hockey?
Yeah.
I think, Chase, you just did, but if you want to.
Oh, well, I did, but honestly, the best video game that I've ever played was NHL Live 98 on PlayStation.
Okay. Well, you got that in. Were you good at it, or it was a good video game?
No, but it was a great video game.
Okay. That went over 5 seconds.
I thought I had 30, and then you cut it to 5.
No, because no one had 30 seconds on the NHL or hockey in general, really. So, really, we got some time. We have not talked about a couple golf bets. I think we have podcasted since the Masters.
Because remember we asked Rick about his PGA, or no, that was about his Masters picks.
That's Masters picks. Yeah, but we've podcasted since then. Brian won a PGA bet. I think you won big too.
I don't remember, but I know I won.
And in the tightest race we've had, Matt, who usually gets last, won our U.S. Open bet, which on the back nine on Sunday, there was a lot of possibilities that I got absolutely fucked by my two go-tos, which it makes sense that that's what would happen. JT, they turned even. I think they were both three over, or combined, they were 3 over on the back. If they would have been even on the back, it'd be a different conversation, I think. Matt had John Rahm.
Yep.
And you had a couple guys that were still out there. Brian had Rory.
Rory and Morikawa.
Yeah, and Morikawa. And then you had who was the didn't you have a South African that wasn't Oosthuizen?
Matt Grace?
Maybe.
Probably, yeah.
But the scores, I mean, like, it's the U.S. Open. Scores are happening. And at one point, I was trading.
Matt had – here's what it was. Matt had John Rahm, Paul Casey, who finished at 1 under. Paul, but I think Casey, he was done early, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was done early.
Gary Woodland and Mark Leishman, they were not great. I had Morikawa, Rory, and then Fleetwood and Hoffman – shit the bed earlier in the day. And Sox, as you said, you had Spieth and Thomas, because I think Matsuyama and Kisner also were done early in the day.
Yeah, but Matsuyama had a good day on Sunday. He did. And it was that guy that you said for Matt. He finished 16, 17, 18 around the time that other guys were making the turn. There was high drama.
Yeah.
There was actually incredibly high drama at the U.S. Open. And I know that's not what we're focused on, because we're focused on our bet. There was incredibly high drama on our bet, because at one point I had been trailing all tournament and I got up near the lead, which at that point Brian had, and Matt was – I was 3 strokes clear of Matt. And then my team came back to the field. Matt's team came charging. Chase, your team came back. And Matt ended up with a big victory.
Yeah, I mean, the difference was John Rahm sinks 2 ridiculous birdie putts on 17 and 18. And I had both Rory and Morikawa were, I think they were both 2 under going into, which 18 was a par 5, and wasn't 15 a par 5?
Matt?
I think
15. No, 18 was a par 5.
Yeah, wasn't there's another par 5 on the back, right?
13 and 18.
13.
Okay. So they were both 2 under, like, at the turn, basically. And neither of them could make a putt. So that was the difference, really. Rahm's putting versus, really, Rory's putting.
Rory killed you because it was tight. He had a couple, actually, close makeable putts that...
Yeah, he had, like, 6-foot birdie putts on multiple holes that he just fucking blew past the hole.
But what a tournament. I mean...
Yeah.
At the turn, you had everyone's least favorite golfer, Bryson DeChambeau. You had Rory.
He put up a score like I would put up on the back nine there.
He put up a snowman, which
put didn't
he
up shoot a 44 on the back nine.
Yeah, 44. Which you know, great. I can tell you, I wouldn't shoot 44 on the back nine at Torrey Pines under U.S. Open conditions.
True.
Unless no. I did. Unless I did. Yeah. Unless I did.
I just feel bad for Louie. Man alive. My guy, yeah. Louie. I'm a big Louie guy. And he
I'm
just,
not.
I don't know how you don't. I truly don't know how you cannot like him.
It's not that I dislike him. It's just that he's there.
I just, like, yeah, I don't care about him. But, like, how do you hit that drive on 17 into the shit? That's right. The one thing you can't do.
Don't pull it.
I mean, just I would
air
just.
It right.
I mean, you hit it right, you're gonna make a bogey anyway because the rough is so thick over there. Like, we're three terrible golfers judging someone who's tied for the lead in the USA.
One terrible golfer and two.
He's
one decent golfer and one good golfer.
He's got a lot of second place finishes, which.
He's got seven second place finishes in majors.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
is that good or is that bad? I don't know. I think that tells you that he's a really hell of a player more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just can't seem to finish.
I don't mind
him. He played well. Rahm won that tournament.
I totally agree. He took it. He took the tournament.
If Rahm doesn't make those two ridiculous putts, Louis wins by one.
Yeah.
Rahm won that tournament.
Well, and if he doesn't make those putts, Louis might win by four because.
Right. There's no pressure or less
pressure.
Maybe he
wasn't feeling it. Like, yeah, like, because on 17.
And that's what it was. It was he had to. What he was trying to do on 17, he was trying to make birdie on 17, which is a
birdie.
18. Which is a birdie hole. He had to birdie one of them. You got to hit driver, and it's a tight landing area, and you just pulled it.
I mean, birdie 18. It's a par five. And.
But you're not that then you're setting yourself up for a playoff.
Yeah.
You're trying to win.
But like going birdie, well, I mean, we'll see. We saw it.
Oh, he hit a hell of a third shot and he just missed the putt.
Right. Which is very makeable. I agree. I love the drama of having 18 be a par 5. I'm not saying that should be like a requisite, but I love a tournament where the last hole's a par 5 because it just throws so much into play with these guys. Eagles, you can almost count on a birdie, but in a U.S. Open, you can also throw a bogey in there because if they hit in the rough, like it's just great, great, great
television. Yeah, no, it's amazing. Like, you go out, that's a very good point. And I've never played it, but I've been to Torrey Pines, and you go out there and you just look at that 18th hole. And I've stood just to the left of, like, I've stood in that bunker almost to where Rahm played his third shot from. And you look back, and you're just like, oh, this is the easiest hole in the world. Like, it's very straightforward, right? I mean, it's just, hit your drive, hit your second shot, two putt, whatever. But it's under that pressure.
I'm kind of changing topics here, but what's your take on this? I thought the majors this year were really exciting because the PGA and the US Open were at courses that one are famous courses and that most people are familiar with. Next year, I mean, the Open next year, I think it's back at St. Andrews because I think it's the 150th, so that'll be cool. But I know the U.S. Open's at the Country Club in Brookline, so Boston. Yeah. And then the PGA is, like, in Tulsa. Like, yeah. That just doesn't scream exciting to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, for a golf fan, where they're going next year, like, for, like, a golf nerd, where they're going next year is really exciting. Like, Brookline is going to be really cool where they have the U.S. Open.
It's one of the oldest country clubs in the country.
It's one of the oldest. You know, Francis Ouimet won the U.S. Open there. He was like 18 years old, youngest person ever to win it back in 1918 or whatever. Southern Hills is awesome. Like, Southern Hills for the PGA or whatever. I think the PGA is there next year.
Yeah, the PGA is there next year. Because it was supposed to be at one of Trump's courses.
Yeah. Like, those are fantastic. Those are fantastic courses for where they're going next year. Like, I don't think Torrey Pines is that real exciting of a golf course for people to play. Like, you know, it's cool. It's right on the water, whatever.
But everybody can play it.
Yes.
And Kiowa. So that was kind of a cool thing about this year with Kiowa and Torrey.
Yeah, you can play absolutely. Absolutely. You can – anybody can go play them.
You ain't playing the country club.
No. No. And you're not playing Southern Hills. You're not – I mean, you can play St. Andrews, I guess. But, like, they've
– they've standardized the U.S. Open.
I mean, Chris Paul is just jacking up threes. Yeah, they've standardized it a little bit. Like, they have
Brookline.
And then, well, I mean, I don't know. You know, they have to choose courses that are going to be difficult for these guys. And,
but, like, I love seeing, like, if my only point is that with the standardization of the U.S. Open, with them having rotating courses such as Pinehurst number 2, the Blue Monsters in there, right?
Pebble.
And then are any of the Wisconsin courses? No, they're not in there.
I mean, Pinehurst, Whistling Pebble. Straight,
right?
That's Pine. No. For the U.S. Open, you got Pinehurst, you got Pebble, you got Oakmont. Are the three that are.
That's the Blue Monster, right?
Blue Monster is down in Florida, Doral.
Okay, I was wrong. It has some nickname or something. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Whistling Straits, was that the U.S. Open or the PGA?
PGA.
Okay. But.
Where the Ryder Cup is this year.
Games or. Courses like Bethpage Black, like, they were always great courses, but they were discovered because they held these kind of events and some kind of rotating where Pinehurst number 2 and Pebble and Oakmont are going to get a majority of these events seems like it gives less chance and notoriety for other golf courses like Erin Hills, like Whistling Straits, which are already they're already famous golf courses, but the opportunity to be out there more. And a lot of these are public golf courses that people can play. Chambers Bay is another example.
No, I mean, Chambers Bay is the one that I think is the most deserving of a second chance.
They got that whole weather.
They got a bad showing. Well, they got a bad showing because of the weather. Pinehurst is fantastic. It's public. Anybody can play it. Like, you don't. Pinehurst is great. Outside of that, you know, Torrey Pines is just not that real exciting of a golf course, I don't think, for most people. I think it's just kind of straightforward. But, like, Pinehurst is going to have a U.S. Open, I think, every 5 years now,
yeah,
is what they're saying, which is fantastic. That place is awesome. Like, you guys, we need to go down there. Like, right, that's
another plug. Pinehurst, if you're listening, we would love to come down. We'd love
seriously,
a bank of rooms.
We'll do a show.
Well, yeah,
get some free golf.
We would love to have a pro on.
Like, that place is fantastic. Like, you can't get any better than that place. So,
yeah, I mean, sponsorship opportunity.
Yeah, yeah, we'll reach out.
Yeah, big time. So, anything else that you guys have on your mind? I mean, it's been a while. So, any sports takes? You know, the Olympics are coming up. The NBA Finals are coming up. I think we already touched on the fact that I don't even know if that was while we were recording, but
I don't think it was, but.
Suns, go Suns, and Suns. I'm all about Suns Hawks.
So I'll say this: I'm just kind of amazed, and I haven't really watched them play at all. But I mean, I knew Trae Young was good coming out of college, but I just thought he was kind of like too fragile. I didn't know how good he'd be in the NBA. He's really freaking good. And same with Devin Booker. The Suns, like, took him in the top 10, and I remember the time thinking, this is, like, the third or fourth best player on Kentucky's team.
I think he was taken 14th or 13th overall.
Okay, he was in the lottery.
Yes, but he was taken. There were a lot of guys that are not in the NBA anymore.
Right. But you look at the box scores from these games, and it's like, This dude's just ridiculous. He's putting up like 35 a game.
Devin Booker's a stud. I think the coolest thing would be Chris Paul even making it to an NBA final. Chris Paul's he's a Hall of Famer. He's coming out of Wake Forest. He played under former Xavier coach Skip Prosser.
And Chris Mack.
Think the Suns story is so cool. Like, they were the worst team in the league for 3 years in a row. For, I mean, what, 2016, 17, 18, something like that? Like, they were
drafted Booker in 15. They drafted Ayton in, I think, 18 or 19.
Yeah, I mean, they were.
That was the year they were the number one pick.
Like, they were terrible. Since then,
they haven't had. And they've traded away a lot of picks because
they took
Bridges.
They were terrible. And just to see how they've kind of developed is just really, really cool. Hopefully, I'm rooting for them to make it to the finals and see what happens. So,
I agree. Also, like, this has got to be for. Assuming most people that live in Phoenix are both Suns fans and Diamondbacks fans. So, like, if you're living through the Diamondback season, then the Suns have got to give you some respite, right?
Okay. Yes. But people that live in Phoenix,
don't care about sports. They're golfing all the time.
Well, a lot of them are retired from other places in the country and they're watching their teams. They don't care about the local teams. Also, they're trying to not melt. That's their two things.
It's true.
It's warm out there.
Now, what is it that Rand always says? It's not the heat that gets you, it's the humidity.
Oh, well, A, I mean, we could last out there. Because I don't, I mean, like, you can give me 115. I'm good. Like, as long as it's dry. Yeah, like, put on some sunscreen. Like,
you gotta worry. What's funny about this game is it's a 13-point game with 4.5 minutes left. So normally, like, in a college game, you're like, oh, this game's over. Or it should be over. And the NBA, until there's, like, a minute left, if it's within 10, like, it's still a game.
Right, because high level of shot makers, you know? A couple guys make a couple threes. But, all right, before we leave, this game's winding down, but we need to do this correctly. WTF moments. I mean, you guys have had a lot happen in your lives. So who wants to raise their hand and go first?
I mean, I can go. We just, I mean,
all right.
We just moved. So I pick Molly up from school every day, and it's a, hey, let's go to our house. And then we get to our house, and she goes, oh, no, this isn't our house. Kind of deal. And just like, well, it is. So we're like, we're 10 days in and we're still getting the, oh, this isn't our house. So that's my WTF of the week. It's just like, well, at some point, just figure the fuck out, you know, like we don't live there anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to have to delete this. Obviously, Molly's going to listen to this.
I was going to say, we better not let Jen hear this. Good thing she doesn't listen.
I mean, obviously, Molly's going to listen to this.
I mean,
it's a national podcast. It's fair.
Hey, yeah, we clearly don't live there anymore. So, come on.
It's fair.
I don't have a good one, but I'd say mine this week is...
You can just say sleep. Like...
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't have a good one because I'm, like, just delirious half the time. But I was trying to get out for a walk on Monday just to, like, you know, have some time to myself. And so, anyway, I was going for this walk around our neighborhood, and I was trying to beat the rain, and I thought, it's not coming yet. Like, I can take a 30-minute walk, and I'll be back. So, it's a 2.5-mile loop. I get out to... 1.25 miles, and it just starts pouring on me. WTF. It wasn't supposed to rain for another hour.
That is a classic Ohio pop-up. Like, it happens. Like, it moves.
Yeah.
They move fast, and then, like, the humidity creates a thing, and they come down.
We need to get a
meteorologist on this podcast.
It's not the heat. It's the humidity sucks.
Exactly. That would have never happened in Phoenix. Never. I have WTF that it's WTF Matt. You're supposed to come in last in all these golf bets. I'm supposed to come in second. And I don't want to come in second. I'd like to win. But as far as me coming in last, I'm not okay with that. Mm-hmm. And I think our new format should be, because we have made this thing where first gets the win, we need to incentivize second and third. So, like, if it's a $30 bottle or a $40 bottle of bourbon, third pays 2/3, second pays 1/3.
There you go.
And
idea.
I like it.
But what the fuck, man? Like, come in third.
We'll start that for major season 2022.
I mean, we got another one coming up here in
the Open?
No, we can't change that midstream.
That'd be like Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be on brand for this podcast, wouldn't it?
It would be be on brand for this podcast.
2022.
Well,
I'm just wondering how many bets do we have to go before Matt and I just finally have to, you know, throw in the towel and just concede and give Sox a win. I'm just worried he's going to stop. I'm worried he's going to stop partaking in the bets because
he never wins. Habitual second place finisher until recently. But I guess I'll have to get more competitive and do
just be better, Sox.
I'll have to do actual homework, which is hashtag not part of this podcast.
No.
All right. Well, I just finished that drink. That was Four Roses Single Barrel. Anybody have anything else?
No, we're good. Let's end the podcast.
Those are the words. Until next time, which who knows when that'll be. See you later.
See you.